again, I was mistaken. When I heard the howling of the demon wolves, I realized that you were trying to reach the Valley of Ren. That brought me here.
It appears that you have been mistaken much of the time, Amberlee snapped.
Alanon said nothing, his eyes meeting hers.
I think you were mistaken in coming to me in the first place, she continued, her voice accusing now.
It was necessary that I come.
That remains to be seen. What worries me at the moment is that the demons have been one step ahead of you from the beginning. How many times now have they almost had me?
Alanon rose. Too many times. It will not happen again. Amberlee rose with him, her face flushing darkly.
I no longer feel particularly reassured by your promises. I want this journey finished. I want to go home again. To Havenstead, not to Arbalon.
The druid's face was expressionless. Understand. I do what I am able to do for you.
Perhaps. Perhaps you only do what suits you.
The druid stiffened. That is unfair, elven girl. You know less about this than you suppose.
I know one thing. I know that neither you nor your choice for my protector have proven very capable. I would be much happier if I had never seen either one of you.
She was so angry she was almost in tears. She stared at them furiously, daring them to contradict her. When they did not, she turned away and started walking down the darkened trail.
You said we must go on to Arbalon tonight, druid, she called out. I want this finished.
Will Ohmsford stared after her, resentment and confusion showing in his face. For a moment he seriously considered just sitting there and letting the elven girl go her own way. She obviously had little enough use for him. Then he felt Alanon's hand on his shoulder.
Do not be too quick to judge her, the druid said softly.
The hand withdrew and Alanon moved over to gather up Artak's reins. He looked back at Will inquiringly. The veilman shook his head and rose. After all, he had come this far. There was nothing to be gained by not going on. The druid had already started after the slender figure of the elven girl as she disappeared up the pathway into the trees. Grudgingly, Will followed.
Chapter 18. It was the evening of the following day. Shadows lengthened across the forested city of Arbalon, and gray dusk deepened steadily into night. Eventide Elicidal sat alone in the seclusion of his study, poring over Gale's list of matters that would require his attention in the morning. Fatigue lined his face, and his eyes squinted wearily in the light of the oil lamp that sat atop the wooden desk he occupied. The room was still, closing the aged king of the elves away in the silence of his thoughts. He glanced over briefly at Manx, who lay sprawled across the room against a bookcase, sleeping soundly. The wolfhound's graying flanks rose and fell rhythmically, his breath exhaling through his nose with a curious nasal whine. Eventine smiled. Old dog, he thought, sleep comes easily to you, deep and dreamless and trouble-free. He shook his head. He would give much to enjoy just a single night's undisturbed sleep. There had been little rest for him. Nightmares crowded his slumber, nightmares that were distortions of the unpleasant realities of his waking hours, carried with him into sleep. They teased and tormented him. They stole wickedly through his slumber, disruptive and hateful. Each night they returned, prodding at his subconscious, fragmenting his sleep so that time and again he shook himself awake until at last dawn brought an end to the struggle. He rubbed his eyes, then his face, closing off the light with his hands. He would have to sleep soon because sleep in some form was necessary, but he knew that he would find little rest. When he took his hands away again, he found himself staring at Al-Anon. For an instant he did not believe that he was seeing the druid. This was only a trick of his mind, brought on by his weariness. But when he squinted sharply and the image did not disappear, he came to his feet with a start. Al-Anon, I thought I was seeing things. The druid came forward and they locked hands. There was the barest flicker of uncertainty in the elven king's eyes. Did you find her? Al-Anon nodded. She is here. Eventine did not know how to respond. The two men stared at each other wordlessly. Against the bookcase, Manx raised his head and yawned. I did not think she would ever come back, the king said finally. He hesitated. Where have you taken her? Where she can be protected, Al-Anon responded. He released the king's hand. We do not have much time. I want you to summon your sons and the most trusted of your advisers, those to whom you have confided the truth of the danger that threatens the elves. Be certain of your choice. Have them gather in 1 hour in the chambers of the Elven High Council. Tell them that I would speak with them. Tell no one else. See to it that your guard keeps watch without. 1 hour. I will meet you then. He turned and started back toward the open windows he had come through. Amberley? Eventine called after him. 1 hour, the druid repeated, then slipped through the curtains and was gone. The allotted hour passed, and those summoned by the Elven King assembled in the High Council. The council room was a cavernous, hexagonal chamber built of oak and stone, with its cathedral ceiling peaked star-like overhead at a joinder of massive beams. A set of huge wooden doors opened into the room, lighted by low-hanging oil lamps suspended at the ends of black iron chains. Against a facing wall was settled the dais of the king, a riser of steps leading to a great, hand-carved oaken throne flanked by a line of standards from which hung flags bearing the insignia of the houses of the Elven Kings. Gallery seats bordered the remaining walls, each set a dozen rows deep, all overlooking a broad expanse of polished stone flooring encircled like an arena by a low iron railing. At the exact center of the room stood a wide oval table with 21 chairs where sat the members of the Elven High Council. Only 6 of these chairs were occupied this night. At one of them sat Andor Elicidal. He spoke little to the 5 seated with him, his eyes straying restlessly to the closed double doors at the far end of the chamber. Thoughts of Amberley crowded together in his mind. Although the girl had not been mentioned by his father when he had come to him with the news of Al-Anon's return, he was certain nevertheless that the druid had succeeded in bringing her back to Arbalon. If not, this council would not have been convened in such haste. He was equally certain that Al-Anon intended to bring her before the council and ask that they entrust to her the search for the Bloodfire. He was not certain what the council would say in response. If the king chose to speak first on the druid's request and to lend it his support, then the others would probably acquiesce to his wishes, though this was by no means a foregone conclusion, given the strong feelings the elves bore about Amberley. In any case, he did not believe that his father would do that. He would listen first to the advice of the men he had gathered about him. Then he would decide. Ander glanced briefly at his father, then looked away again. What would his own advice be, he wondered suddenly. He would be asked to speak, yet how could he trust himself to be objective where Amberley was concerned? Conflicting emotions colored his reason with their intensity. Love and disappointment intermingled. His hands locked before him on the table in response to what he was feeling. Perhaps it would be best if he said nothing. Perhaps it would be best if he simply deferred to the judgment of the others. His gaze shifted momentarily to their faces. Other than Darden and Roe, who kept watch outside the chamber doors, no one else had been told of this meeting. There were others his father might have called, good men, but he had chosen these. It was a balanced choice, Ander thought to himself as he considered the character of each. But what sort of judgment would they exercise when they heard what was being asked? He found that he was not sure. Arion Elicidal sat on his father's right, the place at the council table reserved for the crown prince of the realm. It was Arion to whom the king would look first, just as he always did whenever an important decision was required. Arion was his father's strength, and the old man loved him fiercely. Just his presence lent Eventine a sense of reassurance that Ander knew he could not provide, however he might try. But Arion lacked compassion, and at times exhibited a stubbornness that obscured his good sense. It was difficult to predict what he might do where Amberley was concerned. Once he had been fond of the girl, the only child of his beloved brother Anne. But all that was long since past. His feelings had changed with the death of his brother, changed further with Amberley's betrayal of her trust as a chosen. There was great bitterness within the crown prince, much of it caused by the obvious hurt that this girl had brought to the king. It was impossible to tell how deep that bitterness ran. Deep, Ander thought, and was troubled by what that might mean. The king's first minister, Aemir Chios, occupied the chair next to Arion. As first minister, it was Chios who presided over the council in the king's absence. An articulate, persuasive man, he could be depended upon to express his feelings candidly. Although Eventine and his first minister were not always in agreement on matters that came before the council, they nevertheless had great respect for each other's opinions. Eventine would listen closely to what his first minister had to say. Kael Pindannon, commander of the Elven army, was the king's oldest and closest friend. Though 10 years younger than the king, Pindannon looked at least that much older. His face seamed like dry wood, his gnarled frame rawhide tough, scarred and knotted from a lifetime of combat. White hair flowed down below his shoulders, and a great drooping mustache arched about the thin line of his mouth. Iron, hard, and fixed of purpose, Pindannon was the most predictable of Eventine's advisors. The old soldier was completely devoted to the king. He always advised with the king's best interests foremost in mind. It would be so with Amberley. The last man at the table was not a member of the High Council. He was younger even than Ander, a slim, dark-haired elf with an alert air and anxious brown eyes. He sat next to Pindannon, his chair drawn back slightly from the oval table, not speaking to the others but watching them in silence. Twin daggers were strapped about his waist, and a broadsword hung in its scabbard from the back of his chair. He wore no insignia of office save for a small medallion that bore the crest of the Elicidals and dangled from a silver chain about his neck. His name was Crispin. He was captain of the Home Guard, the elite corps of elven hunters whose sole duty was the protection of the king. His presence at this council was something of a mystery. He was not a man from whom Ander would have expected his father to seek advice. But then his father did not always do what Ander expected. He paused in his evaluation. With different backgrounds and different personalities, the men his father had gathered were alike only in their absolute loyalty to the old king. Perhaps because of that loyalty, they were men to whom Eventine felt he might safely entrust the decision, however difficult, that must be made concerning Amberley. Perhaps, too, they were here because they were the ones whose counsel he would seek when it came time to defend the elven homeland. And that time was near. The inevitability of a terrible struggle between elves and demons confronted them at every turn. Each day the Elkris weakened further, decay and wilt spreading inexorably through her branches, stripping her of beauty and life, weakening the power that maintained the forbidding. Each day new reports were received of strange and frightening creatures, things born of nightmares and dark fantasies prowling the borders of the Westland. Elven soldiers patrolled from the Valley of Ren to the Serendanon, from the matted brakes to the Kershalt, and still the number of these creatures grew. It was certain that more would follow until at last enough had broken free to unite and attack the elves in force. Ander rested his elbows on the table and folded his hands together against his forehead, shading his eyes against the light. The Elkris was failing so quickly that he wondered whether enough time remained to reach the Bloodfire, even if Alanon had succeeded in his quest. Time. It all came down to that. The massive doors at the far end of the chamber swung open, and six heads turned as one. Alanon strode through, tall and forbidding in his black robes. With him came two smaller figures, cloaked and hooded, their faces hidden. Amberlee, Ander thought at once. One of them must be Amberlee. But who was the second? All three moved wordlessly to the opposite end of the wide oval table. There the druid seated his companions, then raised his dark face toward the king. "My lord Eventine," he bowed slightly. "Alanon," the king replied, "you are welcome." "All are assembled." "All," Eventine assured him, then named them one by one. "Please say what you have come to say." Alanon came forward several paces until he stood midway between the elves and the two cloaked figures. "Very well. I would say this once only, so I ask that you listen and heed. The elven nation stands in grave peril. The Elkris is dying. She fails quickly now, more quickly with the passing of each day. As she fails, the wall of the forbidding weakens. Already the demons your forefathers imprisoned within begin to break loose once more into your world. Soon all will be free, and once free, they will seek your annihilation." The druid came forward a pace. "Do not disbelieve this, elven lords. You do not yet appreciate, as I do, the extent of the hatred that drives them. I have seen but a handful of these creatures, a handful that have crossed already through the forbidding, but even those few conveyed to me the whole of the hatred that has consumed them all. That hatred is awesome. It gives them power, more power than they possessed when they were first shut from the earth. I do not think that you will be able to stand against it." "You do not know the elven army." Pindanin's face was dark. "Commander," Eventine spoke softly. The old soldier turned at once. "Let us hear him out." Pindanin sat back, frustration lining his jaw. "The Elkris is the key to your preservation," Alanon continued, ignoring Pindanin. "When the Elkris dies, the forbidding will be lost. The magic that created it will be lost. One thing can prevent that, and one thing only. In accordance with the elven legend and the laws of magic that gave her life, the Elkris must undergo a rebirth. That can be accomplished in only one way. You know it well. A chosen in service to the tree must carry her seed to the source of all life, the earth's Bloodfire. There the seed must be wholly immersed in the fire, then return to the earth where the mother tree roots. Then there will be new life for the Elkris. Then will the wall of the forbidding be restored and the demons shut once more from the earth. Men of Arbalon, 2 weeks earlier, having discovered that the Elkris was dying, I came to Eventine Elicidal to offer what aid I could. I came too slowly. The forbidding had begun to weaken already, permitting a few of the demons imprisoned within to escape.
Before I could act to prevent it, they had slain the Chosen, killing them as they slept, killing all they found. Nevertheless, I told the king that I would seek to aid the elves in two ways. First, I would travel to Paranor to the castle of the Druids, and there search the histories of my predecessors in an effort to learn the secret of the word Safehold. I have done this. I have discovered where the Bloodfire can be found. He paused, studying the faces of the men who listened. I told the king as well that I would seek out one who might bear the seed of the Elkris in quest of the Bloodfire, for I believed that such a person existed. I have done this also. I have brought that person with me to Arbelon. Ander tensed expectantly as a murmur of disbelief rose out of the men assembled. Alanon turned and beckoned to the smaller of the two cloaked figures. Come forward. Hesitantly, the dark form rose, then walked to stand beside the druid. Lower your hood. Again, there was hesitation. The elves leaned forward impatiently, all but Eventine, who sat rigidly in his chair, hands gripping the carved wooden arms. Lower your hood, Alanon repeated gently. This time the cloaked figure obeyed. Slim brown hands reached from beneath the folds of the robe and pulled back the concealing hood. Amberlee's sea-green eyes, frozen with uncertainty, met those of her grandfather. There was an instant of stunned silence. Then Arion sprang to his feet, livid with rage. No, no, druid, take her out of here. Take her back to wherever it was you found her. Ander rose halfway out of his chair, shock reflected in his face at his brother's words, but his father caught his arm and brought him back to his seat. Quick, angry comments were exchanged, but the words were lost in a jumbled mix of voices that drowned one another out. Eventine's hand went up sharply, and the room was still again. We will hear Alanon out, he repeated firmly, and Arion slipped back into his chair. The druid nodded. I would ask you all to remember this. Only a chosen in service may bear the seed of the Elkris. When the year began, there were 7. 6 are dead. Amberlee Elicidal is your last hope. Arion leaped up. She is no hope. She is no longer a chosen. The elven prince's voice was hard and bitter. Kael Pendannon nodded in agreement, distaste showing on his seamed face. Alanon came forward a step. You would question whether she is still a chosen. The faint, mocking smile passed quickly across his lips. Know then that she questions this as well. I've told her and I have told her grandfather, and now I tell you that no feelings in this, neither yours nor hers, will determine the truth of what she is. Your feelings are not of any consequence. King's grandchild or outcast from her people, what matter, elven prince? Your concern should be with the survival of your people. Your people and the peoples of all the lands, for this danger threatens them as well. If Amberlee can be of service to you and to them, then what has gone before must be forgotten. Arion stood his ground. I will not forget. I will never forget. What is it that you ask of us? Aemir Chios interrupted quickly, and Arion sat down once more. Alanon turned to face the First Minister. Just this. Neither you, nor I, nor Amberlee herself has the right to determine whether she is still a chosen. Only the Elkris has that right, for it was the Elkris who determined that she should be a chosen in the first place. Therefore we must know the tree's feelings. Let Amberlee go before the Elkris. Let the Elkriss decide whether to accept or reject her. If she is accepted as a chosen, she will be given a seed, and she will go in search of the Bloodfire.
And if she is rejected?
Then we had best hope that Commander Pendannon's faith in the Elven army is well placed.
Arion rose once more, ignoring the warning glance his father gave him.
You ask too much of us, Druid. You ask that we place our trust in one who has already proven untrustworthy.
Alanon's voice was steady.
I ask that you place your trust in the Elkriss, much as you have done for countless centuries. Let the decision be hers.
Arion shook his head.
No. I sense a game being played here, Druid. The tree speaks to no one. She will not speak to this girl.
His angry gaze shifted to Amberlee.
If the girl would have us trust her, let her tell us why she left Arbalon in the first place. Let her tell us why she disgraced herself and her family.
Alanon seemed to consider the request for a moment, then finally looked down at the elven girl beside him. Amberlee's face was white.
I did not mean to bring disgrace to anyone, she replied quietly. I did what I felt I had to do.
You disgraced us, Arion exploded. You are my brother's child, and I loved my brother very much. I would like to understand what you did, but I do not. What you did brought shame to your family, to all of us. It brought shame to the memory of your father. No chosen has ever rejected the honor of serving. None! But you. You discarded the honor as if it meant nothing.
Amberlee was rigid.
I was not meant to be a chosen, Arion. It was a mistake. I tried to serve as did the others, but I could not. I know it was expected of me, but I could not do it.
Could not do it.
Arion came forward threateningly.
Why? I want to know why. This is your chance to explain. Now do so.
I cannot, she answered in a tight whisper. I cannot. I could not make you understand, not if I wished, not if...
She looked imploringly at Alanon.
Why did you bring me back, Druid? This is senseless. They do not wish me here. I do not want to be here. I am frightened. Do you understand? Let me return home.
You are home, the Druid answered gently, a sadness in his voice that had not been there before.
He looked over at Arion.
Your questions are pointless, Elven Prince. Give thought to the purpose for those questions. Give thought to their source. Hurt gives way to bitterness, bitterness to anger. Travel too far that road and the way is lost.
He paused, dark eyes fixing those of the Elven Council.
I do not pretend to understand what caused this girl to leave her people. I do not pretend to understand what caused her to choose a life different from that which was offered her in Arbalon. It is not my place to judge her, nor is it yours. What has gone before is done. She has shown courage and resolve in making the journey back to Arbalon. The demons have learned of her. They have hunted her. They hunt her still. She has endured hardship and risked danger in returning. Should that have been for nothing?
At the mention of danger to Amberlee, alarm flicked briefly in Eventine's eyes. Ander saw it. It was there, and then quickly gone.
You might have taken this girl before the Elkriss without consulting us, Emer Chios pointed out suddenly.
Why didn't you?
Amberlee did not wish to return to Arbalon, Alanon responded. She came because I persuaded her that it was necessary, that she must help her people if she could. Still, she should not be forced to come in secrecy and stealth, but openly. If she is to go before the Elkris, it should be with your approval.
His arm slipped about her slender shoulders. She glanced up at him, surprise reflected in her child's face.
You must make your choice.
The druid's face was impassive.
Which of you will stand beside her, elven lords?
The chamber grew still. Elves and druids stared wordlessly at one another, eyes locked. All but forgotten by now, the second cloaked form shifted nervously at the far end of the table. The seconds slipped away. No one rose. Then suddenly Ander Elicidal found Alanon looking directly at him. Something unspoken passed between them, an understanding almost. In that instant, Ander knew what he must do. Slowly, he came to his feet.
Ander, he heard his brother protest.
He glanced quickly at Arion's dark face, saw the warning mirrored in the other's hard eyes, then looked away again. Wordlessly, he moved around the table until he stood before Amberley. She stared up at him, frightened, like a wild thing poised to flee. Gently, he took hold of her shoulders and bent to kiss her forehead. There were tears in her eyes as she hugged him back. Emer Chios rose.
I do not see that there should be any difficulty in making this decision, my lords, he addressed them. Whatever options we may have, we should certainly take advantage of them.
He stepped over to join Ander. Crispin glanced briefly at Eventine. The king sat rigid, his face expressionless as he met his captain's eyes. Crispin stood up and crossed to stand beside Ander. The council had divided evenly. Three stood with Amberley. Three remained seated at the table. Eventine looked at Arion. The crown prince of the elves met his father's gaze squarely, then turned his bitter eyes on Ander.
I am not the fool that my brother is. I say no.
The king looked at Pindannon. The old soldier's face was hard.
My trust is in the elven army, not this child.
Then he seemed to hesitate.
She is your flesh and blood.
My vote will be as yours, my king.
Cast it well. All eyes fixed now on Eventine. For an instant he did not seem to have heard. He sat staring at the table before him, a look of sadness and resignation on his face. His hands slid slowly across the polished wooden surface, then locked tightly. He came to his feet.
It is decided, then.
Amberley shall go before the Elkris. This council is adjourned.
Arion Elicidal rose, cast a withering glance at Ander, and stalked from the High Council without a word. Within the concealing shadow of his cowl, Will Ormsford saw the pain and disbelief mirrored in Ander Elicidal's eyes as he stared after his brother. A breach had been opened between these two that would not quickly be closed again. Then the elven prince's gaze shifted suddenly to meet his own, and he looked away self-consciously. Alanon was speaking again, advising those who remained that Amberley would rest a day or two before going to the Elkris, and that after she had done so, they would meet once more. Will rose, keeping his robes drawn close about him, for Alanon had warned that he was not to reveal himself. The chamber began to empty, and he moved over to stand with Amberley. He saw Ander Elicidal cast a glance back at them, hesitate, then follow the others out. Alanon had drawn Eventine aside and was speaking to him, their words hushed and secretive. There appeared to be some argument between them.
Then with a reluctant nod, the elven king departed as well. Will and Amberlee were left alone with the druid. Alanon beckoned. Follow me. Quickly he led them from the council room, ushering them back down the outer hallway until they stood once more in the cool dark of the entry beyond. The druid paused, listened, and then turned to them. Amberlee. He waited until her eyes were fixed on his. I want you to go to the Elcris tonight. Surprise and confusion registered on the elven girl's face. Why? She asked in disbelief, then quickly shook her head. No. No, this is too quick. I want time to prepare myself before I do this. Besides, you just finished telling my grandfather and the others that it would be a day or two before I went to her. Alanon nodded patiently. A small but necessary deception. As for preparation, what preparation will you make? This is not a test of skill or endurance. No amount of preparation will help you. Either you are still a chosen in service to the tree, or you are not. I am tired, druid. She was angry now. I am tired and I need to sleep. I cannot do this thing now. You must. He paused. I know that you are tired. I know that you need sleep. But that will have to wait. You must first go to the tree, and you must do so now. She went rigid at his words, a trapped look springing into her eyes. Then she began to cry, uncontrollably. It was as if everything that had happened, the unexpected appearance of the druid at her cottage, the news that the Elcris was dying and the chosen slain, the realization that she must return to Arbalon, the harrowing flight north from Havenstead, the confrontation with the council and her grandfather, and now this, had caught up with her all at once and overwhelmed her completely. All of her defenses seemed to give way. She stood before them, small and vulnerable, sobbing, choking on words that would not come. When Alanon reached for her, she pulled quickly away, stepping apart from them both for several long minutes. Will Ohmsford stared after her helplessly. She stopped crying finally, her face still turned away from them. When she spoke, her voice was barely a whisper. Is it truly necessary, Alanon, truly necessary, that I go to her tonight? The druid nodded. Yes, elven girl. There was a long silence. Then I will do so. Quiet and composed once more, she rejoined them. Without a word, Alanon led them out into the streets of the city. Chapter 19. Pale silver moonlight spilled down out of the heavens and washed the summer night. Sweet smells and comforting hums rose out of the dark in slow, dizzying waves that floated and danced in the warm breezes and brushed the hedgerows and stands, the flower banks and the bushes of the gardens of life. Dappled shadows layered the garden's colors in oddly knit patterns of black and white. Tiny life forms that awoke with darkness skittered and flew with sudden, invisible bursts that left no trace of their passing. In the midst of it all, solitary and ignored atop the small hillock that overlooked the homeland of the elves, the wondrous tree they called the Elcris continued its slow, inevitable march toward death. The long journey had begun to take its toll. The perfect beauty that had marked the Elcris in health was gone, the perfect symmetry of her form marred and broken. Silver bark peeled away from trunk and limbs, black and rotting, hanging in strips like tattered skin. Blood-red leaves curled tight with wilt, a scattering of those that had already fallen dotting the earth beneath, dried and withered husks rustling with the wind. Like some weathered scarecrow set upon a pole above the fields, she stood stark and skeletal against the night horizon. Al-Anon, Will Ohmsford, and Amberlee stared up at her wordlessly from the base of the rise, cowled faces lifted against the screen of moonlight. For a long time they were still, motionless save for the ripple of cloth garments in the light breezes, silent. When Amberlee finally spoke, her whisper filled the quiet with a deep, sudden poignancy.
"Oh, Al-Anon, she looks so sad."
The druid did not respond, his tall, spare frame rigid beneath the robes, his face hidden within the shadow of the cowl. The smell of lilacs wafted past them, lingered momentarily, and was gone. After a moment, Amberlee glanced over at the big man, arms folding tightly into her robe.
"Is she in pain?"
The movement of the druid's head was barely perceptible. "Some."
"She is dying."
"Her life is ending. Her time is almost gone." There was a long pause.
"Can you do nothing for her?"
"What can be done for her must be done by you." Al-Anon's deep voice was a gentle murmur. Amberlee's sigh was audible, a shiver of acceptance that passed through her slender body. The seconds slipped away. Will shuffled his feet wearily, waiting for the elven girl to come to terms with herself. This was not easy for her. She had not expected even to be here tonight. Neither of them had. They had expected that with the adjournment of the council, they would be allowed at long last to sleep. There had been no sleep since before their flight into the Valley of Wren and their unexpected reunion with Al-Anon.
They were exhausted. "She is sleeping," Amberlee whispered suddenly.
"She will wake for you," the druid responded.
"She does not want this," Will thought. "She has never wanted this. She is not simply unwilling, she is frightened. She said so that first night in the little garden behind her home. Yet she has never said why."
Will looked toward the summit of the rise.
"What was it about the Elkris that frightened her so?"
"I am ready." She said it simply, her voice calm. Al-Anon was silent for a moment, then nodded, the cowl bending slightly with his response.
"Then go.
We will wait for you here."
She did not move at once, but stood quietly for a moment as if seeking something more from the druid. But there was nothing more offered.
Gathering her robes about her, she started forward, moving up the gentle slope, face lifted toward the still, ragged tree that waited at the top. She did not look back. She completed the climb in only moments and stood alone before the Elkris. She stood, not yet within reach of the tree, but just beyond, her small form withdrawn into the concealing folds of the dark robe, her arms clenched tightly against her sides. From atop the rise, the westland lay open to the sweep of the horizon, and she felt small and unprotected. The night breeze blew across her face, laced with the scents of the garden, and she breathed it deeply, steadying herself.
"I need only a moment," she told herself. "Just one moment." But she was so afraid.
She still did not understand why this was, not even now, after all this time. She should be able to understand it. She should be able to control it. Yet she could not. That made it all the worse. The fear was unreasoning, senseless, blind. It was always there, lurking in the back of her mind like some beast of prey, slipping from its place of hiding whenever she gave thought to the Elkris. She fought against it, struggled determinedly, but it swept through her nonetheless, irrepressible, dark. She had been able to suppress it in Havenstead, for in Havenstead the cause was distant and past. But now, returned once more to Arbalon, standing less than a dozen feet away, remembering the touch of the Elkris? She shuddered at the memory. It was the touch she really feared. Yet why should that be? No harm came from it? No injury? It served only to allow the Elkris to communicate her thoughts through images. But there was this sense of something more that had always come with the touch, ever since that first time the Elkris had spoken with her. Something. Her thoughts scattered at the sound of an owl's soft hoot. She was aware that she had been standing there for several minutes and that the two men waiting below must be watching her. She did not want that. Quickly, she began to walk around to the far side of the tree. Druid and Veilman watched silently as the dark figure of the elven girl circled the Elkris and disappeared from view. They remained standing a moment longer, but when she did not reappear, Alanon seated himself wordlessly on the grass. Will paused, then sat down next to him. What will you do if the Elkris decides that she is no longer one of the Chosen? The druid did not turn his head. That will not happen. The Veilman hesitated a moment before speaking again. You know something about her that you have not told either of us, don't you? Alanon's voice was cold. No, not in the sense that you mean, but in some sense. What must concern you, Veilman, is seeing that nothing happens to her after you leave Arbalon. The way he said it left Will with the very distinct impression that this particular subject was closed. The Veilman shifted his weight uncomfortably. Can you tell me something else, then? He asked a moment later. Can you tell me why she is so afraid of the Elkris? No. Will flushed heatedly within his cowl. Why not? Because I am not sure that I understand it myself, nor do I think that she does. In any case, when she is ready for you to know about it, she will tell you herself. I doubt it. Will slouched forward, arms resting loosely on his knees. She does not seem to think much of me. Alanon did not respond. They sat in silence for a time, glancing periodically toward the summit of the rise and the solitary tree. There was no sign of Amberlee. Will glanced over at the druid. Is she safe up there alone? The mystic nodded. Will waited for him to explain why she was safe, but he did not offer an explanation. The Veilman shrugged. Being this close to her, he must have some means of seeing to it that she was protected, he decided. At least, he hoped so. For a long time, Amberlee did not move. She could not. Her fear had paralyzed her. She stood rigid and chilled, not 5 feet from the nearest branches, staring hypnotically at the Elkris. Within her, the fear ran like liquid ice, numbing even her thoughts. She lost all sense of time, of place, of everything but her inability to take those last few steps forward. When at last she did take them, it seemed that it was someone else who took them for her. She remembered only the distance between herself and the Elkris closing and then disappearing altogether. She was beneath the canopy of the tree, lost in shadow. The night breeze died into stillness, and the cold within her turned to heat. Wordlessly, she dropped to her knees amid the clutter of dead leaves and broken twigs that blanketed the ground, her hands folding tightly in her lap. She waited. Moments later, a ragged branch dipped downward and wrapped gently about her shoulders. Amberlee. The elven girl began to cry. There had been silence between them for quite some time when Will suddenly recalled something odd that Alanon had said earlier. He had determined that he would ask nothing further of the druid following their last exchange, but his curiosity got the better of him. Alanon? The druid looked at him. Something is bothering me. He took a moment to arrange his words. When you told Amberley that we must come here tonight, she reminded you that you had informed the elves at the High Council that she would be given a day or two to rest. You answered her by saying that what you told them was a necessary deception. What did you mean by that?
Moonlight revealed the familiar mocking smile as it slanted across the mystic's lean face.
I was wondering when you would get around to that question, Will Ohmsford.
He laughed softly.
Your inquisitiveness is all-encompassing.
Will grinned ruefully.
Do I get an answer to my question?
Al-Anon nodded.
An answer that will not please you. The deception was necessary because there is a spy within the elven camp.
The veilman went cold.
How do you know that?
Logic. When I arrived at Paranor, the demons were waiting for me. Waiting for me, veilman. I was not followed. That suggests rather strongly that they knew in advance that I would be coming there. How did they know that? For that matter, how did they know about me in the first place? Only Eventine knew that I had returned to the Four Lands. Only Eventine knew of my plans to travel to Paranor. I told him in confidence that I would go there to study the druid histories in an effort to discover the location of Safehold. Eventine was cautioned to say nothing and would have done exactly that.
He paused.
That leaves only one possibility. Someone listened in on our conversation, someone who had reason to betray us to the demons.
Will looked doubtful.
But how could that have happened? You said yourself that no one even knew that you had returned to the Four Lands before you spoke to Eventine.
That puzzles me also, the druid admitted. The spy must be someone with easy access to the king, someone who would know everything that he is about. One of his household staff, perhaps.
He shrugged.
In any case, it was fortunate that I did not mention to the king where Amberley could be found, or the demons would almost certainly have reached her before I did.
He paused, black eyes fixing on the veilman.
They would have reached you as well, I imagine.
Will felt his skin crawl.
The suggestion was a thoroughly disconcerting one, even now. For the first time since he had met Al-Anon, he was grateful that the druid was so close-mouthed about what he knew.
If all this is so, then why did you tell the elves at the High Council so much? He asked. If there is a spy, isn't there a rather good possibility that he may discover everything that was said at that meeting?
The druid leaned forward.
A very good possibility. In fact, I intend to make certain that he does. That is the reason for the deception. You see, the demons already know that we are here, and they know why we are here. They know who I am. They know who Amberley is. They do not yet know who you are. All this they have discovered from my conversation with Eventine and from what they have seen in pursuing us from Havenstead. We have told the elves at the High Council nothing new, except for one small item. We have told them that Amberley will rest for several days before she goes to the Elkris. So for the next several days at least, the demons will expect us to do nothing. That deception, I hope, will give us a small but very useful advantage.
What kind of advantage?
Will frowned.
What do you have in mind, Al-Anon?
The druid pursed his lips.
As to that, Will, I'm afraid that I will have to ask you to be patient for a bit longer. But I promise that you will have your answer before the night is done.
Fair enough? There was nothing particularly fair about any of this, Will thought glumly. Still, there was no point in pressing the matter. When Al-Anon had made up his mind, Will knew that that was the end of it.
One thing more. The druid put a cautionary hand on his shoulder. Say nothing of this to Amberlee. She is frightened enough as it is, and there is no reason that she should be frightened further. Let this remain a secret between you and me.
The Veilman nodded.
That much, at least, they could agree upon.
Only minutes later, Amberlee appeared suddenly from beneath the shadow of the tree. She stood for a moment silhouetted against the night sky, hesitated, then started toward them. She walked slowly, carefully, as if uncertain of her movements, hands held clasped together against her breast. Her cowl was lowered, her long chestnut hair fanning out behind her in the breeze. As she neared them, they could see plainly her stricken face. It was pale and drawn and streaked with tears, and fear reflected brightly in her eyes. She came up to them and stopped. Her slender form was trembling.
Al-Anon, she cried softly, choking on his name.
The druid saw that she was on the verge of collapsing. He reached for her at once, took her in his arms, and held her close against him. She allowed herself to be held this time, crying soundlessly. For a long time he held her, all the while saying nothing. Will watched uncomfortably and felt generally useless. After a time the crying stopped. Al-Anon released the elven girl and stepped back. Her face remained lowered for a moment, then lifted to his.
You were right, she whispered.
Clasped hands came away from the folds of her robe and slowly opened. Nestled in her palms, like a perfectly formed silver-white stone, was the seed of the Elkris. Chapter 20 Moments later, Al-Anon led them from the gardens. Cowls drawn close about their faces and cloaks laced tight, they slipped through the gates and past the sentries of the Black Watch and started back toward the city. The druid did not offer any explanation as to where he was taking them, and they did not ask. They walked in silence, Al-Anon a step or two ahead, Will and Amberlee following. Both were exhausted. The Veilman glanced often at the elven girl, more worried about her than he cared to admit even to himself, but she gave little indication of her emotional state, and he caught only an occasional glimpse of her face within the covering of the hood. Once he asked quietly if she was all right, and she nodded back to him without speaking. A short time afterward, they found themselves approaching the manor house of the Illicitals. Beckoning wordlessly, Al-Anon led them onto the grounds surrounding the darkened home, directing them through a screen of pine that bordered the south lawn, then along a series of hedgerows to a small alcove and a pair of floor-length glass windows draped in heavy shadow. Standing before the doors, Al-Anon tapped softly on the glass. There was a moment's wait, then the curtains covering the window moved slightly. A latch within was released and the doors swung open. Quickly, Al-Anon motioned them through, glanced furtively about, and followed, closing the doors behind him. They stood for a few seconds in darkness, listening to the faint sound of footfalls as someone moved slowly about the room. Then a light was struck to a candle's wick. Will found that they were in a small study, burnished oak from walls and shelving gleaming in the candle's dim flame, soft tracings of color from leather-bound books and tapestries visible through the heavy shadows. At the far side of the little room, an aged wolfhound raised his grizzled head from a small earthen-colored rug on which he lay and thumped his tail in greeting. Eventine Elicital placed the candle on a small work table and turned to face them. Is everything arranged? Al-Anon's deep voice broke the stillness. The old king nodded. And your household? The druid was already moving across the room to the single door that led into the rest of the home. He opened it, looked through briefly, then closed it again. Everyone sleeps but Darden and Roe, and they stand watch at my bedroom door,
believing me asleep as well. There is no one here but old Manx. The wolfhound glanced over at the mention of his name, then lowered his head between his paws and closed his eyes. Al-Anon walked back across the room. Then we can begin. He motioned Will and Amberlee to take chairs about the work table, drawing a third chair over for himself. The veilman sat down wearily. Amberlee started forward, then stopped, her eyes on her grandfather. Eventine looked back at her, hesitated, then moved quickly to embrace her. The elven girl went rigid for a moment, then her arms went about him.
I love you, grandfather, she whispered. I missed you.
The old king did not speak, but nodded into her shoulder, one hand coming up to stroke her hair. Then he took her head gently in his hands and tilted it back so that she was facing him.
What has happened is behind us, Amberlee. Forgotten. There will be no more harsh words between us. This is your home. I want you here with me, with your family.
The elven girl shook her head sadly.
I have spoken with the Elkris, grandfather. She has told me that I am her chosen. She has given to me her seed.
The old man's face went pale and his eyes dropped.
I am sorry, Amberlee. I know that you wish it could be otherwise. Believe me, I wish it could be otherwise, too.
I know you do, she replied, but there was despair in her eyes. She separated from him and seated herself at the table with Al-Anon and Will. The king remained standing for a moment, his eyes staring over at his granddaughter. There was a lost and frightened look to him that suggested a child strayed. Slowly he recovered himself, then moved to sit with the others. Al-Anon leaned forward, hands folding carefully atop the table.
Eventine and I agreed at the close of the High Council that we would meet in secret later this night. What is said here shall remain between the four of us and no other. Time slips away from us, and we must act quickly if we are to save the elven people. The Elkris is failing. Soon the demons contained within the Forbidding will break through into the four lands. Eventine and I shall be there to meet them when they do. But you, Amberlee, and you also, Will, must go in search of the Bloodfire.
He turned to the elven girl.
I would go with you if I could. I would go with you if there were any possible way to do so, but there is not. One of the demons that has already broken through the Forbidding, as well as some still locked within, possess powers that your grandfather and the elven people cannot stand against without my help. It will be my task to shield the elves from those powers. Sorcery to withstand sorcery. It must be so. But in my place I send Will Ohmsford, and I have not chosen lightly to entrust your care and safety to him. It was his grandfather who went with me in search of the Sword of Shannara, who found it, and who then stood alone against the warlock lord and saw him destroyed. His great-uncle Flick once saved your grandfather's life. Will has the strength of character that marked both men. He has their sense of honor. You have seen that he holds the elf stones that I once gave to his grandfather. He will protect you as I would. He will stand with you, Amberlee. He will not fail you.
There was a long moment of silence. The veilman felt embarrassed by the druid's words, embarrassed and uneasy. He was not so sure of himself. He glanced quickly at Amberlee and found her staring back at him.
You are a chosen in service to the Elkris, Al-Anon continued, drawing the elven girl's eyes back to meet his own. Though we all might wish it were otherwise, the matter has been settled as we agreed that it should be. You are the last of the chosen, and therefore the last hope of your people. You alone can restore the Forbidding.
A terrible responsibility, Amberley, but it belongs to you. If you fail, demon and elf will do battle until one or both have been utterly destroyed. The Elkris has given you her seed, and so you must take it in quest of the Bloodfire. That will not be easily done. The Bloodfire lies within a place called Safehold, and Safehold is a part of the old world. That world is gone, forever changed. Down through the ages, the place called Safehold has been all but forgotten. Even the Elkris no longer recognizes the path that leads there. If not for the Druid histories, Safehold might have been irretrievably lost to us. Yet the histories are a link between past and present. I have read them, and know where Safehold lies. He paused. It lies within the Wilderun. No one said a word. There was no need. Even Will Ohmsford, a Southlander and a Veilman who until now had never set foot in the Westland, had heard of the Wilderun. Buried within the forests that lay south of the elven homeland, it was a treacherous and forbidding stretch of wilderness virtually encircled by mountains and swamp. Fewer than half a dozen hamlets could be found there, and those were peopled by thieves, cutthroats, and outlaws of every conceivable sort. Even they seldom strayed far from their villages or the few well-worn trails that crisscrossed the region, for in the timber beyond, the rumors said, were creatures no man would care to encounter. Will took a deep breath. You wouldn't happen to know where, within the Wilderun, we are to find the Bloodfire? Alanon shook his head. I cannot be sure. Even the Druid histories refer in part to the geography of the old world, and the landmarks that existed then are gone. You will have to rely on the Elfstones. I thought as much. The Veilman sagged back in his chair. Use of the Elfstones will tell the demons where we can be found. Unfortunately true. You will have to exercise great discretion, Will. I will relate to you what the Elkris told the Chosen about Safehold before they were slain, what she later told also to me. This may help you in your search. The Bloodfire lies within a wilderness with mountains and swamp all around, obviously the Wilderun, as the Druid histories record. Now here is the rest of what she said. There is a deep mist that comes and goes. Within the wilderness can be found a lone peak. Beneath the peak is a maze of tunnels that burrow deep within the earth. Somewhere within the maze is a door made of glass that will not break. Behind the door, you will find the Bloodfire. He cocked his head reflectively. As you can see, the general description of the Wilderun remains surprisingly accurate, even after the passage of so many years and the cataclysmic changes wrought in the geography of the earth by the Great Wars. Perhaps the balance of the description remains accurate as well. Perhaps the Bloodfire may still be found beneath a lone peak within a maze of tunnels. He shrugged. I would give you more help if I had it to give, but I do not. You must do the best you can with that. Will managed a faint, if somewhat forced, smile of encouragement. He did not dare look over at Amberley. How do we reach the Wilderun? He asked. The Druid glanced questioningly at Eventine, but the Elven King appeared preoccupied. At last, distracted by the silence, he looked over at Alanon and nodded absently. Everything has been arranged. The Druid seemed to hesitate, then turned to Amberley. Your grandfather has selected Captain Crispin, who commands the Home Guard, to be your guide and protector on this journey. Crispin is a very resourceful and courageous soldier. He will serve you well. He has been instructed to choose half a dozen elven hunters as your escort. 6 is a small number, but a small number may be best in this case. It will attract far less attention than a large command, and it should enable you to travel more swiftly. The plan that the king and I have settled on is this. You will be taken from the city in secret. The means have been left to Captain Crispin. Only Crispin will be aware of your mission. He and the elven hunters under his command will go with you as far as you need them. All will have been instructed that no harm is to befall you, that they are to do whatever is necessary to protect you.
Al-Anon. It was Eventine who spoke, glancing over suddenly, a worried look on his face. His penetrating blue eyes found those of the druid.
There is something I have not yet told you. I did not speak of this before, because we had only those few moments at the close of the council. But I think something should be said now. There is reason for concern in this venture beyond the obvious danger of being tracked by the demons who have pursued you this far.
He leaned forward, arms crossing loosely on the table to support his weight. His face, caught in the dim light of the candle, seemed very old.
You know how the Chosen died. Perhaps Will and Amberley do not.
His gaze shifted. They were torn apart, mangled almost beyond recognition. Horror reflected in the faces of the elven girl and the veilman. The king put his hand gently on his granddaughter's shoulder.
I do not tell you this to frighten you more, Amberley, nor you, Will, but because of this.
He looked back at Al-Anon.
Since you have been gone from Arbalon, there have been more deaths like those of the Chosen. A great many deaths. Whatever it was that killed them has been roaming the surrounding country, systematically destroying everything and everyone it encounters, man or beast, young or old. Over 50 elves have died, all in the same manner, all by being ripped apart. 3 nights ago, an entire elven patrol was waylaid and destroyed. 6 armed men. A week earlier, an army compound at the north edge of the city was invaded, and 20 men were killed while they slept. There has been an increasing number of demons sighted in the Westland since the Elkris began to fail, and more than a few unpleasant, pitched fights as well. But nothing on this order. Nothing as deliberate and premeditated. This creature knows what it is about. It kills with purpose. We have tried without success to track it. We cannot find it. We have not even seen it. No one has. But it is out there, and it hunts us.
He paused.
It was sent once, Al-Anon, for the purpose of destroying the Chosen. It did so, all but one. It may be that it will be sent again.
Amberley had gone white. Al-Anon rubbed his bearded chin thoughtfully.
Yes, there was such a demon in the old days, he mused. A demon that killed out of instinctive need. They called it a reaper.
I don't care what they called it, Will spoke up suddenly. What I want to know is how to avoid it.
Secrecy, the druid offered.
However vicious and cunning this demon, it will have no more reason than its brethren to suspect that you have left Arbalon. If it believes that you are still here, if they all believe that you are still here, they will not be looking for you elsewhere. Perhaps we can give them that impression.
He turned to Eventine.
The time will come very soon now when the Elkris can no longer maintain the Wall of the Forbidding with sufficient strength to contain the remainder of the demons still imprisoned within. When that time comes, the demons will concentrate their strength at the wall's weakest point and break free. We cannot wait for that to happen. We must find the place where they will attempt their crossover and do what we can to prevent it. Even if we fail, we can fight a delaying action which will slow them in their march on Arbalon. They will try to march here, for they will seek to destroy the Elkris. They must. They cannot tolerate her. Remember that while she was strong, she was anathema to them. But as she weakens, she becomes less so. Once they have broken through her wall, they will move quickly to destroy her. We must do what we can to prevent that. We must give Amberley time to reach the Bloodfire and return again. We must keep the demons from Arbalon until then. So, he let the word hang for a moment in the silence of the little room. We shall deceive the demons who are already through the forbidding by acting as if preparations to seek the Bloodfire are yet to be completed. We shall make it appear as if you have not left. The demons know that it was I who brought Amberley here. They will expect me to be with her when she leaves. We can make use of that. We can focus their attention on me. By the time they realize that they have been misled, you should be well beyond their reach. Unless their spy is more resourceful than you anticipate, Will wanted to say, but he decided not to. It all sounds very promising, he said instead. That seems to settle everything except the matter of when we should leave. The druid leaned back in his chair. You will leave at dawn. Will stared at him in disbelief. At dawn? Tomorrow? Amberley sprang to her feet. That is impossible, druid. We are exhausted. We have not slept in almost 2 days. We have to have more than a few hours' rest before setting out again. Alanon held up his hands. Peace, elven girl. I understand this as well as you. But consider. The demons know that you have come here for the purpose of carrying the seed of the Elkris to the Bloodfire. They know that you will attempt to leave the city, and they will be watching closely. But they will not be watching as closely now as they will in a day or two. Do you know why? Because they will expect you to rest first. That is exactly why you must leave at once. Surprise offers you your best chance to slip past them. Understanding flickered in Will's eyes. This was the advantage that the druid had hoped his deception at the High Council might yield them. There will be sufficient rest for you after you are gone from the city, Alanon promised. 2 days of travel will enable you to reach the elven outpost in Dre Wood. You can catch up on your lost sleep there. But delay in Arbalon is dangerous. The quicker you are gone from here, the better your chances. Will hated to admit it, but there was logic in the druid's argument. He glanced quickly at Amberley. She stared down at him silently for a moment, frustrated and angry, then turned back to Alanon. I want to see my mother before I leave. The druid shook his head. It is not a good idea, Amberley. Her jaw tightened. You seem to think that you have the final say in whatever I wish to do, druid. You don't. I want to see my mother. The demons know who you are. If they know also of your mother, they will expect you to go to her. They will be waiting for just that. It is dangerous. Just being here is dangerous. Surely you can find a way for me to spend 5 minutes with my mother. Her eyes dropped. Do not be so foolish as to suggest that I should see her when I return. There was an unpleasant moment of silence. Alanon's dark face turned suddenly expressionless, as if he were afraid he might reveal something he wished to remain hidden. Will did not miss the change, and it puzzled him. As you wish, the druid agreed. He rose. Now you must sleep while you can. We must go. Eventine stood up with him, turning to face his granddaughter. I am sorry that Arion spoke so harshly at the council, he apologized, looking as if he had something more to say, but could not. He shook his head. I think that in time he will come to understand, as I did. He trailed off awkwardly, then put his arms around Amberlee and kissed her cheeks. If I were not so old, he began emotionally, but the girl put her fingers to his mouth to stop him. She shook her head. You are not so old that you do not see that you are needed here more than you are needed to go with me. She smiled, and there were tears in her eyes as she kissed him back. Feeling a bit self-conscious, Will stepped away from the table and moved quietly over to the sleeping Manx. The aged wolfhound heard his approach. One eye stared up at him questioningly. On impulse, Will reached down to pet the dog, but Manx gave a low, barely audible growl of warning. Will drew back. Unfriendly beast, the Veilman thought to himself. He returned to the others. Eventine shook hands with him and wished him well. Then, with Amberlee beside him, Will followed Alanon back through the floor-length windows into the night.
Chapter 21. The druid took them to a small cottage nestled on a forested slope at the northern edge of the city amid a cluster of similarly structured homes. There was nothing to set this particular cottage apart from any of the others, and this suggested to Will the principal reason for its selection. Though unoccupied when they entered, it was fully furnished and had been lived in recently. Alanon did not offer to explain what had become of the owners. He entered the cottage as if it were his own, moved through the darkness of a living room to light several oil lamps, then carefully drew closed all the curtains that decorated the cottage windows. Having checked once through the remaining rooms while Will and Amberlee sat waiting at a small table graced with freshly cut flowers and embroidered mats, he returned momentarily with bread, cheese, fruit, and a pitcher of water. They ate in silence, Will consuming a full meal despite the late hour, Amberlee eating almost nothing. When dinner was finished, Alanon led the elven girl to a small bedroom at the rear of the home. A single, shuttered window stood latched and barred behind drawn curtains. The druid checked the fastenings thoroughly, then nodded. Wordlessly, Amberlee moved to the feather bed. She was so tired that she did not even bother to undress, but simply kicked off her boots and fell wearily across the covers. She was asleep almost immediately. Alanon paused long enough to place a light blanket over the exhausted girl, then stepped from the room, closing the door noiselessly behind him. Alone in the living room, Will Ohmsford stared through the curtained windows into the darkness beyond, where the lights of the city proper winked back at him like fireflies in the forest shadows. He glanced about restlessly as the druid reappeared.
"We have to talk, Alanon."
The big man did not look surprised.
"Still more questions, Will Ohmsford?"
"Not exactly."
The Veilman looked uncomfortable.
"I see. Well then, why don't we sit down?"
Will nodded and they moved over to take chairs across from one another at the little table where they had eaten their meal. Once seated, the Veilman seemed uncertain as to how to proceed. Alanon regarded him expressionlessly, waiting.
"Something happened to me when I tried to use the elf stones on that demon in the Tirfing. Something that I do not understand," Will began finally, avoiding the other's dark eyes. "I had almost decided against saying anything to you about it because I did not want you to think that I was looking for an excuse not to make the journey into the Wilderun."
"That would have been foolish," Alanon spoke quietly.
"Tell me what it is that happened."
The Veilman did not seem to hear him.
"The only reason I decided to speak about it was that I grew concerned for Amberlee's safety if I remained quiet. If I am to be her protector, then I cannot afford to play games with my pride."
"Tell me what happened," the druid repeated.
Will looked up uneasily.
"I will explain it in the best way I can. As I said, when the demon came at me and I tried to use the elf stones, something inside of me resisted. It was like some sort of blockage, like a wall that had imposed itself between me and the elf stones, so that I could not call upon them for aid. I held them out before me and tried to reach down into them, to call forth their power, but nothing happened. In that instant, I was certain that you had been wrong in your belief that I could use the stones as my grandfather had done. I thought that I was going to die. But then, just before the demon reached me, the wall within me seemed to break apart, and the power of the stones flared out and destroyed the creature. He paused. Since then, I have thought carefully about what happened. At first, I decided that I simply had not understood how to use the elf stones, that it was my inexperience or confusion that caused the resistance. But I no longer believe that. It was something different. It was something about me. The druid stared back at him wordlessly for several minutes. One hand toyed idly with the small black beard, pulling at it, twisting it. Finally, the hand moved away. You will remember that I told you that the elf stones were an old magic, a magic from the days before man, a magic that belonged to the age when the fairy people ruled the earth and magic was commonplace. There were many different elf stones then, and they served many different purposes. Their colors identified their uses. The blue elf stones, such as the ones that you hold, were the seeking stones. Possession of the blue elf stones enabled the holder to find that which was hidden from him merely by willing that it be so. For example, the blood fire for which you will search.